You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
So I'm a youth pastor here now. I work with the junior high ministry. Before that, I was a teacher and I was a special educator, and my focus was on behavior, actually. My focus in schooling was on mild to moderate needs, intervention specialist. But then actually at work, I ended up just getting more and more towards behavior, working with kids with extreme behaviors until I was doing like a behavior unit. So I was at a school that I think was really, really good at that. And I think that they equipped us really well. And I got to really focus on it. So a lot of the tools that I'm going to talk about this morning are really from that. And I think they've proven extremely useful in working with young kids. So let's jump in. Shaping behavior or building character. What is it we're after with our kids? Imagine this highly unlikely scenario. You're at the grocery store, you pass by some candy, the kid asks for it, you say no, and they start screaming and just losing their minds. Okay? It's loud, you're stressed, you're not sleeping very well. So, this is parenting class, right? First thing you would ask is, okay, what do I do in that situation? All right, that's a good question. I think an even better question is, why do you do that? What's your end goal for your parenting approach in the moment? What are you going after? You're going to say something, you're going to do something with your kid, right? They're having a meltdown in the store. What are you going to do? More importantly, why that? Why that? Why are you going to take the approach that you're going to take? So, by the way, I wanted to do like discussion. I know we're like all spread out, but there's not that many people. I think folks could hear you. So, raise a hand if you got a thought for this. What would be some bad goals we as parents might develop in the moment? Not necessarily bad actions to take, but bad goals, like a not very good why behind an action we might take towards our kid in the moment. Yeah.
I just want this kid to shut up because I'm embarrassed.
Yeah. I want them to shut up because I'm embarrassed. That's good. Anything else? What might be a not very good thing going on in our heart?
I want them to like me.
I want them to like me, like the kid or the people in the store. Or...
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I just want them to like me, like. You're disrupting my goal of being the cool mom because you're going to make me crack down. Yeah.
Well, now I'm mad, so I want you to be upset too as a punishment.
Revenge. Revenge. Yes. That is not a good goal either. Okay, good. You guys thought of all the ones I thought of. So those would be some bad goals, but you can't do nothing. So what would be some good goals you could draw on in the moment there? So you're not trying to get back at your kid. You're not trying to just shut them up so you don't have to feel embarrassed around other people. Yeah. Okay, good. You want them to be grateful. So it's kind of an end result. Like, it'd be nice if they were grateful like right now in the moment, but I want them to be grateful like in general. This is a show of ingratitude. Yeah. Okay, I want them to be able to hear a no and be able to deal with it. Yeah. Is that yours? What else? Yeah.
I want them to know the difference between healthy choices.
Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah. Want to know that, hey, candy's not always the best option? Yeah. Good. Anything else? Yeah.
I want them to know that there are better ways to get what they desire.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I wanted to know there's a better approach than to throw a fit and have a temper tantrum. And that would prevent this behavior in the future. That's good. What about the goal to remain calm yourself? That's a good goal, right? What about the goal to stop the behavior now? That's a good goal, right? They're screaming. If you could do something that's going to get them to stop, like, that's good, right? Isn't that what we're after? That's probably one of the first things that we think. Like, I wish they weren't screaming right now, so I want to get them to stop screaming, right? Those are good goals. And now, this is a question that kind of brings it together for our point today. How would you prioritize those goals? Stopping the behavior, preventing the behavior, lifelong lessons they can get from this, me remaining calm, me acting out of love, not anger. How would I prioritize those? If you have a thought, go ahead. That's kind of a hard question, but I realize I asked it as if like I need you to respond. But okay, well, here's my thoughts. Think about how bad it could be if your goal to stop that behavior or prevent that behavior was more important to you than your goal to remain calm yourself. What would that mean? What would you do? What if it was more important to stop the behavior than it is for you to act in love? What if it's more important to stop the behavior than it is to teach them gratitude, right? I'll scrap all those other things, all those long-term things, if I can just get them to stop right now, right? That wouldn't be a good approach, would it? But at the same time, getting them to stop is still a good thing, right? This is what we're talking about. Shaping behavior and building character. These are really two distinct things. Shaping behavior is changing, stopping, or starting a child's action, okay? Do something, get them to stop doing something, get them to do something more often or less often or less intense, right? You're trying to change their behavior. Building character is instilling values and knowledge that lead to wisdom, love, and integrity. So it's like it's the end goal. It's what you're really going for as an adult. I hope that they have integrity. I hope that they serve God. I hope that they serve people and are givers rather than takers. That's what I'm after. So these two approaches are both valid. They are both good, and they are both our job as parents. And they often work together. So you might have been looking at those two, and maybe you're expecting me to say, you know, shaping behavior is lame. Don't try to do that. Just try to build character, right? That's not true. Like, it's nice if you have strategies to get your kid to stop screaming at the store, to get your kid to stop hitting, things like that. Those would be nice to have, wouldn't they? As long as we keep both of these in mind. And they often work together. They work together because if you can learn how to shape behavior well, like changing a kid's actions, getting them to stop doing something, getting them to start doing something, it leads to less stress for you and for them, and it leads to less potential for harming the relationship. If you can cut things off before they become a battle, that's great. Right? It's just going to make life easier. So these can often work together. At the same time, these two things can be in tension. You know what I mean by that? Where if you really go for the one, you might be hurting the other. If you really go for the other, you might be hurting the one. All right? The store one is a good example, where you could stop the behavior by doing something that is going to harm your relationship with the kid. In other words, don't break the kid to fix the behavior. I want you to get that lodged in your head. Don't break the kid to fix the behavior. That's like the worst thing you could do, right? If you could stop them from tantruming by making them feel crushed and embarrassed, then you have done more harm than good, even if you've successfully stopped the behavior, all right? That's not what we're after. So these can be intention. So an example, your kid is being careless. You've told them not to run in a certain room, but they're allowed to run in the room right next to it. And so they run from there into the room they're not allowed to run in, and they've run for 3 steps where they're not supposed to. Let's say they're like 3, 4, 5, and they break something valuable. All right. If your response is, I'm going to teach you a lesson, and you get into a rage, you teach them a lesson. You teach them a couple lessons, actually. One, you teach them be careful with my stuff. Two, you could teach them that it's appropriate to blow up at people when you're angry, right? You've taught them both of those lessons. So we need to be careful that in our attempts to shape a behavior, to stop a behavior, we're not adding more to it than we intend. And these two things, hopefully you've picked up on this, these two things are not created equal. While both are good, both are valid, building character is more important than shaping behavior. I might have had too many spoilers for this discussion question, but let me throw this out anyway. Do you agree with that? Do you disagree? And why? Do you agree that building character is more important than shaping behavior?
I feel like when I brought God into like the parenting things that I do, with, especially with my older child who's six, he'll be more responsive and thoughtful in the end, and I see more fruit there, which I think that falls into the category of building character, right? Like bringing God into it. So I've seen more success and thoughtfulness on his end, and he respects me more, and maybe we've had really good conversations from it. Yeah. He might do that same behavior again, but I feel like it kind of builds, and I see, you know, his response to that.
Nice. Yeah, that's awesome. Other thoughts on this question? All right, yeah, here.
I think, obviously, I agree, but I think it's important to think behavior is something that maybe if you're not there, they'll still do the same things, where if it's in their character, that's something that's built, as it says, in, like with integrity, who they are when no one's looking, and that's obviously way more important than them just appeasing you by not doing the behavior in front of you.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Shaping behavior, it can just be all about, like, it can be all about self. You know, avoiding a negative, getting a positive, where his character runs deeper. Yeah. Cool. But if we want to say this, all right, it can put us in a tough situation, okay? So when Johnny asks, where is my toy? Where's my truck? And you were like, I thought that truck was broken. I thought he didn't play with it anymore. I threw it away. He's like, where is it? You're like, okay. If I model integrity to my son by telling him the truth, it's going to cause a bad behavior in him. If I model dishonesty, then his behavior will probably be fine. If I'm like, I don't know, keep looking for it. you know, so then you're at a crossroads. What do I do? Do I want to focus more on acting in a way that I hope they act, or managing the situation, right? So the crossroads can be tough. It can be tough. There's no easy answers. And hopefully, okay, by the way, we're covering a lot of kind of do's and don'ts today. I should make a disclaimer. One of the most important things you can do as a parent is to parent under grace. This was just that was the entire topic. Was it just last time? Two times ago? I don't remember which one that was. There was a whole morning session on parenting under grace. That means realizing that, you know, God is forgiving. He offers to forgive us. We should agree with him and not cling on to guilt. All right, that can crush us. But at the same time, it's still helpful to look at these things. So please don't take this as like, you know, a weight. Honestly, for me, it was kind of painful putting this stuff together. And afterwards, it was like, I got a list of stuff that I need to work on, and I'm trying to do it under grace myself. So, all right, so let's shift gears a little bit. I want to talk about some tools for building character, and then I want to talk about some tools for shaping behavior, okay? So I just said building character is more important than shaping behavior, but we're going to spend more time on the shaping behavior stuff, because if you ever come here, or if you go on the website, zenos.org/parenting, almost every lesson has to do with building character. And it's really, really good stuff. How do I help my kids love God? How do I help my kids serve others? How do I teach them to be hospitable? All these things. It's really, really good stuff. And so I felt like, especially with my background in education, I kind of have a niche the other way. All right. So if we blow through these and you're like, wow, he didn't make encouragement seem that important. It is. It's more important than the stuff we're really going to focus on. But there you have it. Okay, so some tools for building character. What do we have at our disposal to help our kids develop character? Number one is the reality behind your example in your life. In other words, are you about the things that you want your kids to be about? It's not just about what you show them, what you communicate to them. It's your life is your best tool for helping shape their character. And the focus here is on the present, not the past or the future. So what I don't mean by that is whatever mistakes you've made in your life, now your kids are going to end up doing the same thing. That's not true. Your kids are going to learn from the way you are now, right? I've seen this countless times where someone who's had all sorts of problems, addictions, etc. So it's about what you're up to now, okay? So don't get hung up on changes you want to make later or things that have already happened in your life. Number two, and I think these are ranked in order, okay? So this section is ranked in order. Number two is modeling. This is showing your kids how to act by example. And this can be simple things like actions, like do you say thank you? You want them to say thank you, do you do it, right? Actions, do you do little things to help out around? You're trying to get them to do it, do you do it? Do you ever do stuff that's not your job, right? And it could be bigger things like values or priorities. And so you can explain to them, so they want something, it's like, we don't really have the money to get that. Well, actually, we could afford it, but we've decided to use our money for this instead. And actually, look, why don't we look online? Here's some of the cool things that our money has been going to. Isn't that awesome? And you start young enough, and it's like, it kind of just clicks for them. It's normal for them, right? So modeling can go from really small things to really big things. Our approach here is do as I do, all right? You want the kids to, you want to be able to say that to your kids, right? Not just do what I say, but do as I do. And that perspective, when you really think about it, turns a lot of our parenting mistakes, into parenting opportunities. You're too harsh with your kid, okay? Well, it's like, dang, I want to model to them. I screwed up. I was too harsh to them. I want to model to them never, ever, ever getting unrighteously angry, right? Are they going to follow that model? Nobody follows that model, all right? None of us do that. But if you've crossed the line a little bit, to be able to go back and apologize, now that is good modeling. And especially if you can apologize without, pleading or making it weird, without beating yourself up, if you can show them, this is what it looks like to own up to something, and I'm sorry and I want you to forgive me, then they'll learn how to do that. They can learn how to do that from us. I had to do this with my son. Oh yeah, I forgot to say, I've got a 6 and 8 year old, and they're awesome. I had to do this with my son, and I was really torn about it because he was being really mean to my wife and yelling at her, and he was supposed to be about to go to a friend's house. And she's like, well, the way you're acting, I don't know. And he's like, no! And he like tries to storm past me. And I stopped him. And I should have stopped him by the shoulders. And I think I said what I should have said is, you do not talk to mommy that way. And you will go to your friend's house if she says you can go. But instead of stopping him by the shoulders, I stopped him with one finger. It was too aggressive. She was like, "Gah!" And it was he was startled. And then I said that to him, and he went off and cried. And I was thinking about it later, and I was like, I was really resistant to the thought that I was too harsh because it was a physical thing, right? And it's I'm not beating my kid. And it's I couldn't get myself to think about that. And it's no, I didn't. But it was too harsh. It wasn't cool. And so that night I sat him down and apologized, and we just had this awesome conversation. It was really sweet. I was I shouldn't have done that. And I was but what I said was still true. You shouldn't. And he's I know, I shouldn't talk to mommy like that. And I was did you end up apologizing to her? And he's yeah. And it was great. And he got it, and it didn't undo any discipline, right? How about modeling changing your mind, all right? When do you want your kids, as adults, when do you want them to be able to change their minds? Shouldn't the answer be anytime they think something is a better move than what they're doing? Right? But so why do we as parents, especially in discipline situations, we feel like if I change my mind, then I'm going to totally screw up this approach to discipline, right? If your discipline has been too harsh and you realize that you've threatened something, you have to stay in your room for 20 minutes. And you're like, geez, they've never had more than a 3-minute timeout. This is way too long. You know, it's easy to feel like I'm going to screw them up or they're not going to respect me if I go back to them and be like, actually, I changed my mind. Actually, it's just 5 minutes. You know, they're not going to be like, oh, I can get whatever I want from mom and dad, right? As long as it's not actually true. You could also make discipline more harsh by changing your mind. If like, you know, they do something and you're like, you know, hey, you can only watch one show tonight because you obviously need sleep, right? And then you talk to your husband or wife, and you're like, they did that same thing to me twice earlier today. And you're like, okay. So you could go back to them and be like, hey, after thinking about it, I decided that you actually can't watch any shows tonight. Then, blah, meltdown, big explosion, right? But that's okay. And you could explain it to them, like, this seemed more appropriate. I didn't realize that you had already done the same thing earlier. You're like, that's not fair. You're a liar. I'm like, that's not true. No, I meant it, but I changed my mind, you know. And if you're consistent with stuff like that, they'd be like, oh, you can mean something and change your mind when you have a better idea. That's modeling. It's good modeling. Asking for help. You're super stressed. You call your spouse to come in. This is like the hardest thing in the world to do for me. Yeah, your kids see that. Like, what do I do when I'm stressed? Do you feel like you have to do it all? You might be modeling that to your kids. So don't be afraid to ask for help. Okay, so why is number one, the reality behind your example, why is that more important than number two? Think about that. Why is the reality behind your example more important than the act of modeling to your kids? It's because modeling as a parenting technique communicates what we intend them to learn, right? Whereas the reality behind our modeling communicates more than that. Where you will be able to communicate the value of, you know, let's say honesty, more by being committed to it yourself than by finding little ways to communicate it, right? Has anyone ever read the book Freakonomics? It's kind of old. This is like 15 years ago or so. It's a really fun read. They analyzed this. It's called the Early Childhood Longitudinal Study from the U.S. Department of Education. And they had this list of factors in a kid's home, and they asked you to guess which of these factors do you think correlate with good test scores for early elementary, and which do you think don't correlate when you factor out all the others. Two of the options was reading to your kids every day or having lots of books in the home. Which of those correlates more to your kid doing well in reading scores? It seems obvious, right? Well, if you read to your kids more, they'll do better, right? The answer, the one that actually correlated more, was that if you have more books in your home. Like, wait, why is that? How would having more books in your home cause them to be better readers? Like, well, it doesn't cause it. It only correlates with it. What causes them to be better readers is that you value reading, and therefore you have the books in your house. And since you value it, you've passed that on without intending to, right? It's what's kind of absorbed. That's the main stuff that gets through. It's the reality behind our modeling that gets through more than what we intend to show our kids. And it's interesting that that's been demonstrated. Okay, number three. Your investment of time into engaging with your kids. Yeah, they'll follow you and appreciate your direction the more you've invested in them. And engaging, that's key. So this means actually interacting with them, putting away the screens. And this is a point I'm telling myself. You know, don't feel satisfied that I'm near my kids while I'm on my phone, right? It's got to be your time engaging with them. And again, this is another one. We have multiple parenting meetings that are all about this. So I'm going to have to blow by it, even though it's extremely important. How about this one? Your instruction to your kids is really good for developing their character. What I mean by this is what you directly explain, what you directly teach to your kids. So while modeling gives the lesson power, instruction gives it clarity, right? So you're modeling something to them, and they might understand it mostly, and you can explain what it means. You can explain key ideas to them. And so part of your instruction, if you teach, reteach, and emphasize what you want them to learn, big life lessons about serving other people, about how awesome God's word is, things like that, then you get a double whammy there of instruction and modeling. The fact that you're making a big deal of it shows your kids that you think it's a big deal, right? So anything you want them to learn, be the one to tell it to them. But you should note on here, where instruction and modeling clash, modeling wins. If you instruct one thing but model something else, the modeling always wins. Has anyone ever read the book Nurture Shock? That's a little bit more of a popular parenting book. It's really good. They have a chapter about racism in kids, and it's really fascinating. And all these big government programs, all this money was put into, how do we teach kids to be culturally aware and fight against racism in children? You know what they found the number one factor is? When parents actually tell their kids that people are equal and you should not be mean to someone because of the color of their skin, right? And that's free. And it works better than these school programs. It works better than, you know, programming on TV. It's like you actually teach it, you instruct it, and it works. And that's been proven. Our next one, number five, encouragement. This is you're telling them, I'm so glad you did this. I think this was great. This is extremely potent, especially when directed at their effort, not their innate ability. You tried so hard. That's so great. I love how you took your time on this. Not you're so smart or you're such a good drawer, right? Again, that's another one we could have a whole lesson on. Corrective discipline is also a tool for building character. Like, yes, it can shape behavior, but it can also build character because it communicates what does and doesn't matter and how much so. What are the things that you get really fired up about, right? That shows something to your kids. That tells them what's important. And lastly, community connections. This is a great tool for building character in your kids, especially as they get older. So as the parent of young kids, your influence is like 95% of what they think, right? By the time they're teenagers, it's more like 51%. Okay, don't underestimate it. You're still the most important voice in your teen's life, believe it or not. It's totally true. I work with teenagers, and they totally care and respect about what their parents think, all right? But there's another 49% that's very important, and you want to make sure you get the right people in there. You want to make sure they're your allies, right? So work with their youth leaders, their teachers, etc. And so this one, number seven, is very important, like I was just saying, but there's a reason why it's number seven, all right? One through six are things that you as a parent do to help build your child's character. This one is something that you're, you know, facilitating other people doing. Yeah, no one else can do the job that you as a parent can. So George Barna wrote the book Revolutionary Parenting, and he argues that this is the main reason young people are giving up on following God. It's that because Christian parents, even the ones who are into following God, and like they love God and they're about it, for the most part, have entrusted all of the spiritual instruction of their kids to a volunteer who works with the kid an hour a week, okay? They can't do the same job that you do as a parent day in and day out in the home. It is up to us to teach our kids. It's like Deuteronomy 6 says, you know, you should teach these things when you get up, when you lay down, when you sit down to eat, when you walk by the road. These words of mine should be on your lips. They should be written on your foreheads and on the palms of your hands. That's how we teach kids what matters, is by our own instruction, right, and modeling. But we should also enlist help. Okay, just some resources for that. You've got this on your handout. So these are basically things that I've pulled from. Dennis McCallum's new book, Christian Parenting, Relational Approach, is very, very good. About half of the book is summarizing the first book on there, The Children for Christ by Andrew Murray, which is like 400 pages, but it is like solid gold. It is really, really good. So yeah, those are good tools. Okay, totally shifting gears here. So that's what's most important. You could screw all these next things up really bad and still end up with really, really great, well-adjusted adult kids, right? But these things that I'm about to cover can really make your life easier. And almost all of these are things that I was taught in school to be a special education teacher, and then I saw work in the classroom, and then I've been able to, like, you know, you see your three-year-old doing something, you're like, this is kind of like, you know, when you try it, and there's a reason why this stuff is taught in education classes. So number one is the interrupt redirect. What does that mean? They're doing something you don't want them to do, so you interrupt the behavior and you redirect them to do something else. This is a really good tool. This is where you can stop a behavior in its tracks. And the way you do it is with a very short, clear direction or question, possibly accompanied by physical direction, especially when the kids are young, or visual cues. So they're doing something they're not supposed to do. They're about to touch something they're not supposed to touch. So you would step in and say, whatever it is, no to that thing. No fireplace. And you grab them and take them away, and you set them down somewhere else. You've interrupted, you've redirected, and you set them down in front of like a toy, something that they want to play with, and you've totally sideswiped the behavior. A lot of times this can be with visual cues, like some signs, sign language, like you need to sit, or no, you need to stop, you need to sit, things like that. At the school that I worked at, it was called Oakstone Academy, we would refer to this as using our Oakstone voice. And it's like a kind of short, staccato, clear, like, we do not hit. And they're like, whoa, you know, and it kind of startles them. Yeah, and I'd say this is the appropriate time to raise your voice. Maybe the only time. What do you really need to raise your voice unless it's to stop something in the moment? Then you can reason with them, and then it should be calm. If you need to stop them from touching the electrical outlet, you know, then you need to be firm. But you stop the action. You don't address character by being loud and by cracking down. You just stop the action. And so use this with caution, okay? Don't make any broad statements. I can't believe you, da-da-da. No, that's not what this is for. This is just we do not hit. Or quiet voice. That's another one. You can, and you're like, physically almost like, and they're like startled by it. And they're like, okay. Do not express anger. Do not express hurt. You can use some exaggerated physical gestures or facial expressions, especially if they're really young. But that's for the sake of being clear, right? You're not showing that you're mad. You're like, you know, and then afterwards, hey, we're cool, right? Okay, for this one, you really need to know yourself to know the danger. If you're worried about blowing up on your kids, maybe just don't do it at all, okay? You know, just like move them away, you know, like you have to know yourself. If raising your voice, if that sets you on a tailspin, just don't, okay? But if not, if you tend to be really soft, this can be a nice tool. Another tool is applied behavior analysis. Okay, so there's a whole thing, ABA, applied behavior analysis. And they probably have a bunch of stuff that's way different than what I'm going to say. But this is what I learned from working at the school that I was at, and it was super helpful. There's other ways to do ABA, but this is what we were taught, and I think it works really well. So analyzing the behavior reveals the best course of action. And so what you want to do is you want to intervene, step in to help shape a behavior, and you want to go for the lightest intervention that will actually work. And so you make an ABC chart. And this reveals the context and function of the behavior. This is an ABC chart. Antecedent is what happened before the behavior, and then the consequence, what happened as a result or right after the behavior. Okay? These are really useful. And because it, yeah, reveals when does this tend to happen, and sometimes it can reveal why does this happen. And often, this can reveal that an environmental change does the trick to fix the kid's behavior. When I was at school, this kid always acts up. Man, every day they're like going off on other kids. And so one teacher's complaining about that, and a couple other teachers are like, really? He's fine in my class. Like, oh, Well, that's the context. Okay, he just hates you as a teacher. Let's shuffle his schedule around. Now, the new class that he's at in fourth period, he goes off in that room with that teacher. What is going on? It's like, well, so we made a chart. It's like, it's the same time every day. They're like, wait a second. What's fourth period? Right before lunch. The kid is hangry. So you make a sticker chart to where if he's good third period, which he usually is, so you're setting him up for success. You make a sticker chart, and if he succeeds, he gets a snack between third and fourth period. Boom, behavior decreases by like 50, 60%. We would see that stuff happen all the time. We saw this with my own kids. It was like, man, it seems like recently they're starting to melt down pretty often. This is happening like pretty often, like once a week. And then we thought about it, and we were like, it's exactly once a week. It's every Friday. This is after we switched home church to be at our house. Or no, after we went to an adult group where our kids were coming to home church and childcare was until 9 o'clock, which is after their bedtime. And we were like, I wonder, is it just they're tired from the work week or from the school week? Or does it have to do with staying up late the night before? So we started taking them home early and getting them to bed. Fridays are fine. And it's like, well, look, there you go. So if you analyze the behavior, you can find a good intervention. Okay, here's a scenario. Let's put on our behavior analysis caps, okay? And I think I'm just going to take up our Q&A time. So if you have questions, come up to me afterwards, okay? So your four-year-old hits their three-year-old sibling, all right? Their three-year-old brother. It's four-year-old daughter, three-year-old brother. The daughter hits the son, but it's only after they've been yelling at their brother for a little bit. Okay, so you figure that out from doing the thing of what happens before they hit. It always starts with yelling, and your response to the yelling is to ignore. Okay, usually that's a very good response to something like that. Kids yell, just ignore it. Wait for a bigger fight. You know, don't worry about stepping in and fixing every behavior. You've wisely, in general, chosen to ignore, but in this case, you ignore the yelling, and that leads to hitting. And the consequence for that behavior is they get a talking to from you, right? And it seems like the more that cycle happens, the more frequently it happens. What is the reason for their behavior? What are they after? What's its function of the hitting? Getting your attention. Are you a teacher? Okay. Yeah. The function of the behavior is to get your attention, right? That's your hypothesis. So let's make an intervention. What are you going to do? Well, one, give them a new punishment for hitting. Instead of talking to them, getting with them, talking about why we shouldn't do that, silently pick them up, take them to their room, close the door, and from the other side of the door, you say, when you're ready to have a calm body, we can talk. Okay, now you're not reinforcing it with what they want. Number two, step in to address the yelling before it escalates, all right? Because there's some things that if ignoring it leads to something worse, then stop ignoring it. Number three, consider, do you have more time to invest in them? Are there strategic times where you could play a game with them or read a book with them to prevent them from like needing you so much they're gonna hit their brother to get you to be with them, right? So this is extremely useful. Another tool for shaping behavior is reinforcement and punishment. Okay, let me fly through these. Let me see which one I really want to emphasize in my remaining couple minutes here. Yeah, people talk about this a lot. This is good stuff. Let me just a couple things. Using a token economy for stubborn behaviors. Using a token economy can be good. That's where they earn actual physical things. My daughter had the hardest time staying in bed, and so we made a chart with three pictures on it. It was a stick figure, and that meant calm body. There was a smiley face with the mouth closed, that meant quiet voice, and there's a picture of a bed, really just a rectangle, that meant stay in bed. In the morning, we would go through it with her every day. We'd be like, did you have a calm body? Did you have a quiet voice? Did you stay in bed? If so, yeah, that's awesome. And we would draw a star in one of the spots. And if she got 3 stars, she got a prize that she had previously picked out. She had said what she'd wanted. We're like, we'd love for you to have that thing. We'd love to take you to get ice cream. That's so great. And so we set up this token economy. Those are good for really stubborn behavior. And the idea there is to get them to succeed and then reinforce. Get them to succeed. If you have a really stubborn behavior, that's like the best way to address it. Do anything you can to get them to succeed, then reinforce that success. Oh yeah, some tips. These are really important, especially this last one. Never give or withhold warmth to shape behavior, because parental love is unconditional, right? Warmth should always be there regardless of their behavior. That is an extremely important principle. And also never use instruction as punishment, right? That's where you're lecturing to them. Like, you did this bad thing, therefore you need to listen to me tell you this stuff for 10 minutes. What does that show them? A punishment is aversive. You're making them aversive to your instruction, right? That's like punishing kids at school by making them write. I hate that. I was a high school English teacher for a little bit too, and it's like you get kids who've been brought up in elementary school that when they're bad, they have to write, and now I'm trying to tell them that writing is cool. It's tough, right? So yeah, don't use lecture as punishment. Next, make sure you have clear expectations. Don't assume that everything they do is intentional. That's projecting the impact of their action on us, onto them, onto the intent of the behavior. So that was a totally convoluted sentence there. That's like taking the way that they've impacted us and being like, you must have meant it because it impacted me this way. That's often not true. Kids do things for all sorts of reasons. They're not necessarily trying to get under your skin, although they might be. So using visuals is helpful for this. Using questions, even with really young kids, whatever you want them to do, get them to say it back to you. And this can also be an interrupt redirect. Hey, what do you need to be doing right now, right? They're starting to lose it. Like, hey, what are you supposed to be doing right now? And they're like, now their brain has switched tracks, and now they're trying to logically answer your question, right? And if they say it back to you, you know they understood, right? And or it's like they're being crazy. They're throwing stuff around. If you could hold their hands, get close to them, what should you be doing? And they're like, calm body. And you're like, great. So now you have a tactile lesson, touch. They saw you, they heard you, and they said it back. It's going to stick much more than, hey, stop, right? Or stop throwing stuff around, right? So that's good. Asking them, hey, you keep doing this thing. What's going to happen if you do it again? And get them to actually answer, tell it back to you. That's going to help the consequence be real to them. Oh, I'll get a timeout. Or, do you know what I mean by this? Do you know what I mean when I say you're whining? Stop whining. You know, and actually have a conversation about it. I did this with my daughter. I was like, you're antagonizing your brother. Do you know what that means? She's like, no. I was like, you're trying to make him angry while doing stuff where you're not actually getting in trouble. And is that nice? She's like, no. I was like, are you breaking any rules? She's like, no. I was like, but are you being kind? She's like, you know, so it can be helpful. All right, I'll skip this one. Just listen to the section on love and logic. There's a couple of these parenting class. It's really good. Give them 2 choices. Actually, just if you just read those, you'll get the gist of it. And here's another one that I'll skip. This is if a kid is in super crisis mode, like a kid older than 6, who's hitting, freaking out, definitely like a, you know, if you're 8, 9, 10-year-old is like trying to punch or scream or hit or kick or whatever, bite, you'd want to use something like this. And if you have any situations like that, just come talk to me afterwards. This is like what I did like all day, every day for a couple years. But if you don't have a super crisis like that, it's not actually that useful. So yeah, there should be many tools in your toolbox to help build your kids' character and shape their behavior. If you can shape their behavior, if you can tweak things, it makes life easier for everyone, and it can help set a good tone in the home. But even more important is building character. So there's all sorts of techniques we can mess up. But the person you are, OK, can come through, okay? So we need to commit our lives to God. We need to commit our lives to serving other people. That's going to come through to our kids. But why not grow in both? Our ability to do both of these things. So the end goal, is it a happy home, quiet afternoon, stress-free parenting? That's aiming too low, shooting way too low. End goal is a well-adjusted son or daughter committed to leaving the world better than they found it. That's what we should be after in parenting. Okay, are we completely out of time, or do we have time for a few questions? All right, a few thoughts or questions. I know we just kind of blew through that super fast. Yeah.
So you talk, I love that you are a special need teacher. That really says a lot to me. You just, yeah, that just put my heart on knowing what you need, know what to do with behavior in children. And also, I have a five-year-old daughter, and when you said those crisis interventions, she does have crisis interventions, but she's five. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that that's normal for a five-year-old than somebody who has issues down the road.
Mm-hmm.
You said that reading is very important in a house. Well, I have a learning disability, and reading comprehension is very hard. So how would you engage that reading is very important in your life when you're when you are adult have trouble reading,
mm-hmm.
or when you are a special need teacher and your child has hard time reading?
Yeah.
How does that, what would you say in any care, in any area in that area?
I would say we model values, not skills. You know what I mean? So if you value something, that's what's communicated to your kids. And you might be modeling more than you realize in a positive way. Or it's like, oh, this thing is hard for me, or I have this disability, and so how is that going to affect my kids? Well, if the way that you respond to it, which I think you have, is to be like, I'm not going to let this get in my way, and I'm going to do everything I can that's good and right, then you've modeled to the kids what to do when they have a hurdle, right? Which is really cool. I think that's super encouraging. And I think that's probably a more of a benefit that you're passing on to them than a negative. So that's cool. One more.
Thanks, Brad. That was helpful. So a lot of what you went over applies, I think, to young kids, obviously. But I'm going to pick your brain since you do junior high.
Mm-hmm.
As a parent of tweens and a teen, like that statistic you said about 51%,
yeah,
is kind of unbelievable because mm-hmm. it certainly doesn't feel like that.
Yeah.
If you could make one recommendation, reading or whatever, for persistent problems. I mean, persistent problems in a little kid is different than in a tween
mm-hmm.
or a teenager. I mean, is there a book you could recommend or just a strategy, or would you use the same like token economy type thing?
Oh no, don't use token economy with a teen.
Okay, I yeah, didn't think sure. so.
You could use a contract with a teen. That's a more mature version of a similar thing. It's a physical thing. They've read it, they've signed it. Make sure they help come up with it. I think the best thing I've read on parenting teens, as someone who's never parented teens but has been around teens a lot, is actually Dennis's book. Christian parenting. Also, Joe Boddy has a couple classes from this on parenting teens, and it's like your biggest tool is your relationship, and hopefully you've gained control over the kids when they're young, and you're slowly releasing that control. You know, gosh, I just feel like there's so much to say. I would just say Dennis's book is really, really good. But yeah, don't do a lot of the stuff that I talked about tonight if you have teens. Yeah. Yeah.
I was just going to say, I think this is really good practical stuff. And just a reminder that this is a lifelong process for all of us.
Yeah.
You know, like we're constantly learning how to develop our character and be able to change bad behavior. And it's great that we can model that to our kids and to mm-hmm. be able to share, like, yeah, I have made bad choices. That was a mistake. And being grateful for God's grace and how he covers that. And I just think about that verse in Philippians 1:6 about, you know, we can be confident of this very thing, that he who began a good work in us will continue it until he comes back. You know, so it just shows that we don't expect perfection all the time,
right.
And yet we can really keep striving to keep growing and developing in these areas. So
yes, yeah, that's really good. And so on that note, we should also, with these type of things, we should get input from other parents. I've bit my tongue many times. I'm around someone with their kid, and it's like, I feel like this would be a good thing to do right now, but it's like I never give unsolicited advice. You know, I've learned that the hard way over many years. I wouldn't say never. Never say never. But you know, what would be really cool is if we have a difficult thing with our kids, like gather around our other parent friends, like, what do you guys think? I did this. What would you have done in that situation? That would just be such a sweet thing, and it can model that to other folks. Sometimes there's little things that you can do that can make life so much easier. When I was a teacher, the principals they had there were especially brilliant with kids. I was trying to contain this kid who was almost my size and having a total meltdown tantrum. I'm like in like safety mode, try to keep other kids safe, and I'm like trying to reason with them. And the principal marched in. This woman, she's like, you know, tall, kind of formidable person. She walked up to him, got really close to him, and she was like, "What do you want?" And he was like, I was like, no way. I was like, it can't be that easy. And she's like, come with me. And she like took him. I was like, geez. And so it was like, that was like a turning point where I was like, I don't know anything. And I want to like soak up everything I can from people around me. Like there's little things we can do that can make a big difference. So cool. Well, should I pray for us? All right. Well, God, it's easy to look at a list of, you know, 110 things like this and kind of feel like, there's so many things I'm not doing, so many things I want to get better at, but we're just really grateful that you're on our side in so many ways. One, you forgive us and accept us exactly as we are because of the blood of Christ. Two, you want to empower us and equip us and just help us progress. And also that you're just willing to fill us with your Spirit who can do so much more than what we can do on our own. We pray that those things would happen for each one of us, that we would be trusting you, counting on you to work through us. And we just pray that a couple of these points would be sticking with each one of us, and you'd help us to grow in these areas. Amen.
Thanks for listening. This has been a Dwell Community Church production.